Well, it's really lovely to be with you all. I've been in this building many times before, but never for one of the St. Nick's talks. So thank you already for your warm welcome and invitation today. I wanted to start with a bit of a personal story. So when I was about 16 years old, I spent about a year practicing a spiritual pathway called Wicca witchcraft, which is a new age, modern, earth-based form of paganism, which involves quite a lot of offerings to pagan gods and casting spells. And I think looking back on it, and I can only look back on it from the perspective I have now, what really appealed about that as a teenager was this sense that here was something powerful that I could do. I was a pretty powerless, insignificant young man, but this was meaningful, this was important. And it also gave me a sense of connection with something beyond the mundane life of school, something special, something spiritual, something beyond. But one thing that spiritual path lacked was community. A sense of being in connection with other people. Like a lot of contemporary spirituality, it was just me on my own. And I mention that because I think most of us are actually really hungry for community. We long for a sense of connection with other people that goes beyond the screen and the filter, a sense where we actually are known and know other people and we're loved by other people despite that close knowledge. I think we long for that. Gen Z author Lamorna Ash, she recently spent a year visiting churches across the country, writing a book, Don't Forget We're Here Forever. It's all about young adults who are exploring faith. And she writes there that about some of the new Christians that she was meeting. And she said this, "I looked at the sense of community their new faith afforded them. And I thought, I want some of that too." And maybe if you're a guest of someone today, you're new to Christian things, you're exploring them, intrigued, it may be that that's one of the reasons why. A longing for connection, for community. And if that is you, then I know very well that you'll be very welcome this afternoon. But then we move from the Christian community to the Christian claims. And the passage we just heard, Jesus says in John 14, verse 6, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And maybe we hear that and it pushes us away again. Because to claim to be the path to God, well, that seems to be too exclusive, even exclusionary. And how could it possibly be the case that that could form the kind of inclusive, loving community that we want? I mean, after all, wouldn't that undermine a welcoming, humble community? If you're in a group that thinks that only you have the way to God, doesn't that lead to feeling superior, to looking down on other people, not just outside, but maybe inside the group, on the people who aren't doing so well on that way to God? And I want to put my cards on the table and be totally honest here. I actually do think that, generally speaking, communities built around exclusive truth claims do tend in that direction. They do tend towards a sense of superiority. But this lunchtime, I want to make three bold suggestions. First, I want to say that when it comes to exclusive truth claims, we are all in the same boat. Everybody is making exclusive claims about religion. But then second, I want to suggest that among all of the exclusive claims out there, Jesus' claims are unique. And that third, it's precisely one of Jesus' unique claims that is able to sustain inclusive community. The kind of community that we would long to be a part of, that isn't superior, but is loving and humble and welcoming. So three fairly bold suggestions. Let's start with the first one. Every claim about religion is exclusive. Because every religion does claim that its beliefs are objectively true. And so necessarily that other religions' contradictory claims are not true. So for example, we could take the four largest faiths in the world, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism. I think 75% of the world's population would claim to be a part of one of those faiths. That's a reasonable sample size when it comes to talking about these sorts of things. Most Hindus would believe that there are many gods, but above them all is an impersonal deity known as Brahman. Most Buddhists don't believe that there is a God, at least not in any conventional sense of the way we usually use that word. Islam believes that there is one personal God who is alone. Christians claim that there is one personal God as well, but this God is an ever-living and loving relationship of three, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I'm not trying to say anything about those beliefs beyond this, that each of those claims necessarily excludes the others. To claim that one is true is to claim that the others are not. And the same is true, I think, of atheist and agnostic beliefs, so the claim that there is no God, or the claim that there's not enough evidence to know if there's a God, to hold that position is to effectively exclude a whole host of religious beliefs that there is a God, that it is possible to know with a reasonable degree of confidence that there's a God, to claim that those positions are false. Even the claim that all religions are different paths up a spiritual mountain, leading to some kind of greater, united, transcendent spiritual reality above and beyond them all. I do think that sounds like a really attractive way out of the exclusive problem. But it does claim to perceive a greater spiritual reality beyond each world religion that those religions themselves do not perceive, and even sometimes explicitly claim does not exist. And so it is a claim to a superior spiritual awareness. It does look down on religions, perhaps even patronizingly. It is another exclusive claim. Look, all I'm saying here at this point is that Christianity, if it is too exclusive, it's not the only member of the too exclusive club. In fact, it turns out that the too exclusive club is very inclusive because everybody is in it. People of every faith and none make exclusive claims about matters of faith. But one reason I think some of us still find exclusive claims so uncomfortable, it isn't that we disagree that one faith could in theory be true and others false. I think that we don't feel we always know enough, that we don't know enough to say which is true, and therefore it would be better, a more reasonable position to take, to just keep an open mind. But in principle, with other areas of life, not knowing enough shouldn't and isn't a reason for saying we can't know. It's a reason for further investigation. Because it's good to have an open mind when we're not sure about something. I think we may be here because we have an open mind. We're trying to figure something out. But the literary critic G.K. Chesterton, he once wrote this: an open mind is like an open mouth. It is meant to finally clamp down on something nourishing. It is meant to finally clamp down on the most plausible possibility. So if we can accept that Christianity is not alone in being exclusive, is there any reason to think that Jesus' claims here in John 14 are uniquely nourishing, uniquely worth clamping down on? And well, this is the second suggestion this lunchtime. Jesus' exclusive claims are unique, and in ways that I think make them particularly plausible and also particularly good news. Because this Middle Eastern carpenter from a backwater town in a backwater province of the Roman Empire, speaking a backwater language, who only did public ministry for about 3 years, who died a gruesome death, he made some remarkably unique claims. So we'll focus on just one of those in our passage. There's so much here. He says, "I am the way." And plenty of religious teachers have said something like, "I can point you in the right way," or "follow my example and you'll get to the right way." Jesus says, "I am the way to God." It's actually a really strange thing to say. I don't know if it's immediately obvious what he even means when he says that. Once when I was a child, I found myself alone quite close to nighttime near the edges of this forest, and it was getting pretty dark, and I was really scared, and I didn't know how to get back to my family who were out on a campsite somewhere else. Now, if at that point somebody that I'd known and I trusted had sort of come up to me, I would have probably said to them, "Look, I'm stuck here. I don't know where I am. Please could you point me in the direction home? Please could you help me to get home?" Now, if you imagine for a moment, if that person had said something like this, if they'd said, look, you do not need to worry. There is absolutely no way that I am leaving you out here. I am not pointing you in the right direction. Come with me. I will take you home. Get in the car with me. I am the way home. I am the way home. That's what Jesus is claiming here. He's just told his disciples that God is a father, that he has a home for them with him, where they'll be safe, where they'll be satisfied, where they'll belong, but they don't know how to get there. And Jesus effectively says, look, don't worry, you're not going to get there through your wisdom or your goodness or your effort. I'm not giving directions on this dark night of a world. I am the way. You'll get there because of the life I lived. And because of the death, I'm going to die. I will carry you there if you simply trust me to do so. That's what the Bible calls grace. And I want to suggest that that is a unique claim. Because every other religion or spiritual path, it is saying something like this, and to climb that path to God or to nirvana or to a satisfied life, you need to climb up. You need to climb up to perfect this practice or to follow this set of rules or to achieve enlightenment or whatever it might be. All of them say it's up to you. Only Jesus says, no, it's down to me. I am the way. And just going a bit further, I want to suggest that that uniqueness, out of all of the world religions, it actually makes Jesus' claim more likely to be true. Because where does that idea come from? Where does it come from? Everything in human culture, I would suggest everything inside our kind of ingrained human psychology, screams at us, perform. Earn the grades. Prove your worth. Even our closest relationships with our friends, maybe in a family or romantic relationship, there can sometimes often be this little hint of, I could mess this up. I still need to prove that I am worth loving here. And I think human religions reflect that instinct. So the question is, what must I do to keep this going, to keep this up, to get further along? But Jesus' claim is that, no, it's what I do. I will carry you home. That totally cuts against the grain of this world, and I would suggest that that's a good indication that maybe it comes from beyond this world, from a mind greater than our own minds can conceive. And it's also better news than any other exclusive claim, because that the longer we live with ourselves, maybe you disagree, this has certainly been my experience, but the longer we spend time with ourselves, the more we realize that actually we're not as brave, and we're not as kind, and we're not as honest, and we're not as courageous as we feel that we often have to present ourselves to others as being. And Jesus is saying to people who realize that about themselves, whose lives are a bit messy and are contradictory and are sometimes morally ambiguous, he's saying, you don't need to pretend. You don't need to perform, to put on a mask. I am the way, and I'll bring you to my Father's house. So Jesus' exclusive claims here, they are unique. I believe they're plausible, and they're appealing. Maybe we've been thinking about this for a while, and this lunchtime, actually, we feel like we've reached the point where we could say yes. I do want to get on that way. I can believe that if there is a God, it's this God. And I would love him to be my God, to bring me home. If that is you today, then do tell someone here. I know that others would love to help you with that. And if that's not us, but we can at least feel a little bit of a tug towards this, a sense that wouldn't it be good if this was true, do follow that thread along. Do keep investigating. See where your mouth finally clamps down. Because going back to where we started, and this is my final claim this lunchtime, a bit shorter, I think we can say that this unique claim of Jesus to be the way, it is also uniquely able to sustain the kind of community that we long for. A community that is welcoming and humble and loving, even towards, perhaps especially towards, those who don't agree. So our third suggestion, Jesus' exclusive claims actually sustain inclusive community. And again, the face of it, I totally realize how unlikely that sounds, because again, we think that any group of people who thought we know the one way are going to feel pretty superior about that towards outsiders, maybe pretty picky about who's included in the innermost inner ring. But just speaking objectively and historically for a moment, that is not what the church was like when it first came to grips with this idea of Jesus's unique and exclusive claims. So the ancient world where the church was born, socially, it was riven by divisions. So there was a total divide between slave and free, socially speaking. In first century Judaism, a Jewish person wouldn't sit down to eat with a Gentile person, people of other races. But when the church started, it was the most radically inclusive body of people that the world had ever seen exist. Just a fact. So the New Testament letter to the Galatians, it says, in Christ Jesus, you are all children of God through faith. There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And we hear that 2,000 years later and we go, well, obviously. But the church scandalized the hierarchical, racist, tribalist cultures of its day by living like that was true. And then also showing a love and generosity towards neighbors who didn't believe. So they tended the sick that others left when the plagues came to their cities. They forgave their persecutors. Even when their persecutors weren't sending a mean tweet, they were throwing them into the arena. Now, I don't want to sound naive at this point. Obviously, the church as a institution, individual Christians have done some terrible things, and they still do. And even in the most healthy Christian communities that we know, there will be messes and problems and issues. That's going to be true wherever you find people who have messes and problems and issues. But there is something about Jesus' unique claim to be the way that has seeded something among his believers that is especially able, has been proven to be able to build the kind of inclusive, humble, loving community that we would love to be a part of. Perhaps some of us have actually experienced that ourselves. Because in religion generally, you do think, I'm accepted by God because I've been morally upright. Or I'm enlightened because I practice this ancient spiritual path really well. And that can lead to a sense of superiority. It did for me when I was practicing Wicca. I did feel superior to other people. But Jesus says that's not how you get to God. He says, I am the way. I bring you to God. Following Christ, therefore, involves saying, I never get there myself. I didn't get there myself. And that does seed humility rather than superiority, because the church then isn't a hotel for all of the self-righteous people who've walked all the way along the way and just want to have a bit of a rest. It's a hospital for broken people who Jesus has carried on the way. And so Christian communities that remember that, they're more likely to welcome those who haven't got it all together and who don't have all of the right opinions, because actually none of us here are here because we have the right opinions at some point. None of us are here because we had our lives all together, or even do still have our lives all together. And that's a healthy, welcoming community to be a part of, and it's a humble community to interact with, even when it's imperfect. And if you are a guest here today, I do hope that you have a friend who would be able to invite you to meet a community imperfect but like that on a Sunday morning or a Sunday afternoon sometime. Maybe you'll find a taste of that community here over lunch in a little bit. So as we finish, every religious claim is exclusive. It's unavoidable, but the exclusive, unique claims of Jesus, they do form and seed an inclusive, humble, loving community. The kind of community that many of us long to be a part of, many of us have found great joy in being a part of. So if you are attracted by Christian community, do spend some time with one and see if these unique, exclusive claims about Jesus actually do work out in how the people are together. And if they do, consider whether that might just mean that that's because those claims are actually true.